Yeah, I joined the BBC in 1943 as a youth in training in those days, and stayed at Droitwich for 43 years till I retired, and I retired as assistant engineer in charge.
The word Droitwich is a famous one in Radio Land.
That's
yes. You can see it on so many of the old radios.
Sets, that's right, yeah.
And so why Droitwich? Why this location for this huge mast?
They did a lot of experiments with the mobile transmitter to see what the sort of service area around about the Midlands. And it was realised they couldn't put a large transmitting station very close to Europe, to Birmingham, because of the problems with overloading and so on. And they'd searched around the various districts, including places like Barnt Green and so on, and finally came up with this site at Wychbold, which was ideally located. A lot of people thought it was because of the salt, but it isn't. That's just incidental. The site was chosen because it was central to the whole of the Midland region.
So what did they actually build on that site then? What were the structures?
Here, the masts went up first, and then the transmitter building itself was erected.
Okay. And how many masts were there? Because there were different things, weren't there?
Yeah, originally there was just two masts, and the two masts together supported the long wave aerial for the old.
So the long wave aerial was sort of dangled between those masts.
That's right. Yes, horizontal and then
like
a vertical.
A clothesline.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, yes. Within the year after Droitwich opened on the long wave national programme, the Midland Regional Transmitter was ready, and that was transmitting from an aerial supported from triatics on the north mast.
How high were the tallest masts?
700 feet.
Wow. And even constructing those was no simple effort, was it?
Well, it wasn't the rigorous building the masts. They went on strike halfway when they reached the 500-foot mark because they felt that they ought to be earning more danger money. And the work ceased for a week or two. Well, there was a tribunal held, and eventually it was agreed that they would get more pay, extra pay.
I should hope so.
And then the work carried on.
Health and safety back then was a different kettle of fish, compared to now. And there was a fatality.
There was a fatality, yes. In fact, there was two, building the station itself. The atrium over the main transmitter hall was a big glass skylight. And a scaffold plank, snapped while they were hoisting up this big metal atrium to the ceiling. And the result is that several of the workmen got thrown clear, and one of them suffered fatal injuries as a result of this. And there was a tribunal held at Droitwich Magistrates Court, and it was said that it was ruled it was accidental death, but it could have been prevented if they'd have used pulleys instead of relying on planks and people just manually holding things up.
It's very much like watching them clean Big Ben this week.
That's right, yes.
And you can see the precautions
versus
the poor chap up there in his jeans in 1980.
Right,
he was doing the same job,
with no
security.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So take us through the history of the radio stations that actually were transmitted from here, right from the very beginning and through the war.
The first transmitter to be installed was the Long Wave National Programme transmitter on 150 kilowatts output. That was carried on through the rest of the 1930s until this was 1934. I'm talking about now when it was opened, and when a war broke out in 1939, the long wave transmission ceased because all the medium wave transmitters had to be very carefully monitored because of the risk of them being used by enemy aircraft for direction finding. So they all the medium wave transmitters had to come under the control of the RAF, and they determined where raiders were heading for, and they would order certain transmitters on that route to close down to confuse the radio detecting system the plane, so they couldn't do any direction finding onto us.
And for a time, radio was almost quite simple because you just had the home service. But that transmitter was actually used for quite clever purposes during the war, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. It was unbeknown to us at the time, except we knew that no account was the transmitter to be allowed to fail. There were various coded messages broadcast, which were picked up by operators in Europe, giving them information on various aspects of the progress of the war, and also it appears afterwards that the BBC got infiltrated by people with other motives, and some of the broadcasts that went out were actually referring to these false propaganda.
So once the war is over, with remarkable efficiency, the BBC re-gears, sorts out its services. And what happens after the war?
Yeah, what happens? First of all, the Home Service, which was the wartime standard programme, retained with its title, and a long-wave transmitter came into use with a service called the Light Programme. The transmitters that were in this extra building that was built, they were eventually used for the third programme, which when the third programme came into operation after a couple of years afterwards. So, and over the years, the modifications have been taking place, transmitters have been replaced. It got to the position where we are at the moment, where the BBC is transmitting Radio 4 on long waves, Radio 5 live on medium waves, and another two transmitters, which originally were Radio 1 and Radio 3, then they became, at the time, was Virgin Radio and Talk Sport.
That's sort of Absolute Now and Talk
Sport.
That's
right, it's Absolute, that's it, yes.
Yes. So the whole complex now is unmanned.
That's right.
When you were there, when it was staffed, what sort of jobs did you have to do?
Well, in the period when I joined, it was all shift working job. Each shift contained about 10 engineers of various grades, and the jobs we had to do were anything from during the daytime taking meter readings regularly to check that everything was working correctly, and at night time when the transmitters closed down, there was a period set aside for maintenance on the transmitters, routine maintenance and cleaning and inspection and things like that.
Now, of course, the audience to medium wave and long wave transmissions now is not as large as it once was, and people are listening on FM and they're listening DAB, and you've got some fairly old infrastructure in there. I recall reading in the tabloids, and one should never trust the tabloids, that there are some bits and pieces, some valves and stuff, which, you know, if they break on these on these transmitters, could never be sourced again. What's the truth, John?
The transmitters we got at Whitbushbold now, as far as I know, which are a mixture of valves and in the output stages, transistors in the early stages. The valves they were using there are replaceable. And in fact, that's one of them on the shelf just there.
Let's have a quick look at that. Yeah. So, do you want to describe that to us?
Yes, that's known as it's known as a vapor cooled tetrode. And these large transmitting valves generate a large amount of heat. And if they had no form of external cooling, they would just fail straight away and melt. So this particular type, it's cooled by the fact that the valve sits in a water jacket. The water boils into steam. It's taken away, condensed, and refed in again as water. And it's the steam that actually takes away the heat from the valve itself.
It's a clever thing, isn't it? Yeah. It's about just over a foot tall. It looks a wedding cake, doesn't it?
Yes.
The sort of appearance of it.
Well, the original valves that were replaced, a different type of transmitter, of course. They were large valves, they're about 4 feet high, something like that, and a large copper anode which actually sat in a jacket which was having water pumped around it. Now, those valves, particular ones I'm thinking of, the reference number was CAT 14, CAT 14. they're the ones that are in very short supply because nobody manufactures them anymore. And from the BBC stocks, for some of the older transmitters they've still got, when the valves fail, it's a question of replacing the transmitters.
You've got a mine of information in your head. Do you ever get a call from somebody who says, John, can we just ask you something?
I don't know. I used to one time. It's just things that, you know, I've remembered all these things from the past.
What's the attraction for you? What's the magic for you? I mean, here you've assembled this incredible exhibition of so many artefacts and bits and pieces from years gone by. Why?
It's just that before I left the BBC, I had a habit of when something was being thrown away, of thinking, well, can this be used again? You know, is it worth saving? And consequently, I built up quite a lot of small artefacts, you know, that would otherwise get thrown in the skip. And after I'd retired, and the administrator of this heritage centre had an idea. He thought, well, Droitwich is famous for salt, so why shouldn't it be famous for radio as well? And through various means, they got in touch with me. And at that time, a lot of this equipment, like the control desk there, were actually becoming spare and were due to go on the skip. And again, I said, well, don't let them go on the skip. I'll have them. So, so I got hold of them and was able to, incorporate them here.
Tell me about this piece of equipment. What does this do? What does this one do?
Well, this control desk originally came to Droitwich in the 1960s from another transmitter which was being disbanded. And this control desk would have controlled the supplies and indications to one transmitter. When it came to Droitwich, it was modified so that it would control four transmitters. And in fact, the way it was used here was the right-hand side of the desk there was the control panel for the home service transmitter. There was one working and one spare. And the left-hand side was for the light programme. Both transmitters worked together in parallel there. So we had 400 kilowatts controlled by this panel and 150 kilowatts controlled by that panel.
Nonna Sophia phoned. She wants to take you to the Frida Kahlo exhibition. Shut up! I remember when they used to say goody, goody. I rather miss that.